It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Politics, 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 politics.
That's right. It's politics, politics, politics. Welcome and good morning. I am your host, Warren Markowitz. This is Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show, and we are live on Spreaker.com. Yes, we're updating our platform. We're moving things forward. We're having a hell of a lot of fun. And we've got a bunch of things we want to talk about today. And I am just thankful very much for our audience to keep us in the top rankings on Podomatic. We've been picking up speed on Spreaker.com. And, of course, everybody who's been listening on YouTube and on Facebook and everywhere else, you can pretty much find us on the web. It's a lot of fun getting back and chatting with everybody and getting stuff off my chest. This is pretty much like my therapy. If you've ever rattled around in my brain after a long day at work, you realize that politics is probably the only thing that lets me unwind, even though it probably pumps me up. But got a couple of things we want to talk about today. Let's talk about rigged elections. We're going to talk about the recent terror attack in New York City, and we're going to talk about the security issues and adverse BS that we've been quietly coming to grips with over the last 30 days since the attack. And we'll call it a terror attack. The domestic terror attack that occurred in Las Vegas. They may not want to address it as such. You got an old white guy instead of a young brown guy doing stuff. But the bottom line is this. When you fire out of a window on a 30-second... Well, when you shoot at somebody from across the street and you wind up hurting or maiming nearly 600 people, that's not anything other than terror, because you've instilled something. I don't believe there was politics involved. Well, yeah, actually, you know what? I think there was politics involved. I think that's part of the problem, and it's the reason why we're not hearing as much as we should about Las Vegas, because they've classified it as a mass shooting, which is, of course, what it was. But in order to be terror, as in political terror, as in terrorism, there has to be a political component. But we haven't heard anything about that yet. We haven't seen anything about that yet. And I think that, my friends, is what we're going to talk about in the probably the first segment of the show. So sit back, relax, enjoy. We're going to run a necessary advert, and we will be back in about a minute and 30 seconds. I'm your host, Warren Markowitz. Thank you very much for joining me on Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show on Spreaker.com. Be right back.
Separating the matter from the chatter, this is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-711-3017 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-711-3017. Again, that's 800-711-3017.
The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times.
And that is exactly what we're going to be doing with today. Politically incorrect speech for politically incorrect times. Here's the thing. It is now November 3rd. If you're listening to this live, it's November 3rd. If you're listening to this on a recording, it's still November 3rd when I recorded this. But here's the thing. October 1st, 32 days ago, we had the worst shooting, mass shooting in American history. Fairly simple. Las Vegas, big old concert. Happens pretty much every weekend or every couple of days down here. And some guy decides to knock out a bunch of windows in a 32nd story suite in Mandalay Bay and rain down hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds of ammunition on people he didn't know, people he knew, people he wanted. You know, it could be almost anything or anyone, but it's 30 days later. All we know about this guy is his brother had an arrest warrant for child porn and was arrested for that. He sent $100,000 to the Philippines with his ex-girl, with his girlfriend, who's now obviously his ex-girlfriend. He owned several homes, and he was a high-stakes video poker player. Okay. We know very little about his politics. We know very little about him individually. We know very little about what's going on. And yet, here he is in one of the most modern hotels in Vegas. And he had 20-plus weapons, thousands of rounds of ammunition, tools, made changes to his hotel room by installing video cameras in the hallway and so forth. And what do we get from this? What do we see? Bupkis. Nothing. They're telling us nothing. So to support my accusations, I want to tell you a story, okay? It was a couple of years ago. It was my wife's birthday. We took our car that we had owned for probably less than a year to one of the local casinos here in town. Not a schlub place, a nice place. We've played there before. We've eaten there before. We've had a good time. And I don't feel overly concerned about my safety. So we go to this show, and we valet parked the car, and I put the ticket in my pocket, and I jam my cell phone in my pocket, and we go off and go on our day. We go to eat. We go to play. We hang out. Somewhere around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, we go back out to get the car. I reach into my pocket, and there's no parking stub. Okay. I must have dropped it. I go back looking. I didn't find it. Turns out that several hours ago, my parking stub was, I dropped it. I pulled it out of my pocket because it somehow got attached to my cell phone. Assumption, because I never really remember exactly what happened. They claim, as in the hotel claims, that they have a video of the gentleman who, and I'm using this term loosely, gentleman who picked up my parking stub, who then proceeded after moving throughout the casino, playing video games, putting his card into the machines and so forth, going and getting my car and driving off with it. Well, how many of you out there would like to bet that I got a successful prosecution and arrest of the individual who stole my car? Yes, he didn't rob me of it. He stole it. That was good old-fashioned Grand Theft Auto, good old-fashioned larceny. He didn't stick a gun in my face. He didn't force me to give him a ticket. He had possession of the parking stub. He took the car, and off he went. Between you and me and the four walls, that's theft. He never had permission to take the car. He never had permission to take the stub. Did he have an obligation to return it? Well, you know what? A civilized society would say, yeah, you got an obligation to give the ticket back, or at least turn it into the valet and say, hey, somebody lost this. I don't know who. You know, be human. Not asking for respect. I'm asking for just general civilized courtesy when dealing with something. Well, almost 4 weeks go by, and I finally recover my car 2 blocks from the hotel in which it was stolen from. $10,000-$11,000 worth of damage later, and about 2 years later, there's still nobody in jail. So tell me something. Here we got video, alleged, of the person taking and doing and having all this fun, and the excuse is we don't know what's going on. Now fast forward to a very modernly built hotel. I was there at its opening in 1999, 2000. Place is big, gorgeous, modern, all high tech and all of the fun stuff. And yet we don't have any video of him coming and going from the elevator. We don't have any video of him bringing up his luggage or having the luggage brought up to indicate how many bags he brought to his room, how he got all those weapons in his room, whether or not anybody else visited his room, how many times the doors are open or closed in his room. All of these things are recorded, monitored, identified. We have nothing from the hotels on what's going on. And then we played a game with Ellen. Now listen, I was never a fan of Ellen's. Seriously. I got a kick out of the fact that she played that bluefish in Finding Nemo. I got a kick out of the fact that, you know, she's rather funny to listen to. Actually, rather light and enjoyable. I got news for you. I've changed my tone when it came to Ellen. Not because of anything else, but I find a woman to be very charitable. But this is the show that they choose to bring the security guard on to make his public statement. So it makes me wonder. Oh, and by the way, he's not been seen or heard from since. 30 days, one appearance for 1 hour, actually less than that, on a softball interview, and nothing. We got Bupkis. What do we got? He barely was able to even utter a full sentence without his handler sitting next to him, trying to push him forward and pull him through. So what are we missing? I'll tell you what I think we're missing. I think we're missing the political aspects of this whole thing. I have a funny feeling that this guy was out for blood because he was either losing money or he didn't agree with the policies or there was something underlying his whole action that he was out to take revenge over something. Makes sense, but why take revenge on 22,000 people you've never met before? So it makes you wonder whether or not this guy was out to make a political statement. Oh, and he conveniently shoots himself at or about the time the police breached the door? How about this? What happened to the computer hard drives? Who schleps around a laptop that doesn't have a hard drive in it? Where is the data on this guy? They claim to say that the laptops they found are missing their hard drives. Last time I checked, even in the best or the worst of government spy movies or novels, they either destroy or they remove the hard drives of the computers so nobody knows what's going on. So tell me, where are they? Why are they missing? What have they found? You know, whether you know it or not, there are tools out there that allow you to search the web covertly. There are tools out there that allow you to erase your tracks to some extent. Nothing is perfect. This guy was in his 60s. He played video poker. He wasn't in the best of shape. I have no idea how much of a nerd he was. But if you use Google or Yahoo or Bing or any of those other mainstream search engines, they got a serious amount of data on you. Have you ever noticed if you look for, I don't know, a plane fare by using Google or Yahoo, next thing you know, all the ads that seem to be popping up seem to be about plane fares or travel or hotels or whatnot. Where's that data? Why haven't they subpoenaed that data from the providers? You go to Cox, which is the biggest provider out here in terms of internet service, and they know where you've been. May not know what you've been looking at or what you've been doing, but they can give you the IP addresses of where you've been wandering through because guess what? They've got to route the traffic. For those of us who are interested in privacy, that's why you use a VPN. That's why you use a proxy service. That's why you learn to use Tor or I2P or Freenet. Because it might be able to point where you went, but it doesn't tell you where you went after that. Understand? We don't know any of this stuff. It makes you wonder with all this modern stuff in the hotels, security itself is nothing but a farce. If you ask me, security in a hotel is BS. If you're not a chip or a machine or a gaming table, you're on your own. And they've proven that to us because guess what? They can't tell us where this guy's been. They can't tell us what this guy did. They can tell us that he ordered for two people for dinner in his suite, but we're not being told anything else. Where's the information? Where's the openings? Enough of that, because there are more questions than there are answers. There are 58 people that are dead. They went to a concert. There's 500 plus that are wounded. There's thousands that are going to be dealing with the trauma for the rest of their lives. Now, mind you, I don't take anything away from any of those people. I'm not knocking any of those people. I'm only sitting here and thinking what they have to be thinking. Plus the fact that, thank God, it didn't happen to me or anybody else I'm close to. But in general, don't we as a people, don't we as a city deserve answers? I think we do. Fast forward to this crazy lunatic that happened in New York City, Halloween. He goes out and rents a truck, and less than an hour later, he runs people down on a bike path in New York City on Halloween. If you've never been to New York City on Halloween and seen the Halloween parade, go. It's an experience. It's one of those things that sits right up there with the Macy's Day Parade, you know, the Thanksgiving Parade that you see in front of Macy's every year. It was a long time ago. It's got to be close to 20 years ago that I went to the parade. But friends of mine lived in the city, and we went and spent Halloween watching a parade. It's an experience. It is one of those things that you simply check off the bucket list of saying, yeah, I was there. But thousands of people participate. This Jihadi John from Uzbekistan, which is, by the way, if you've never found it on a map, is one of the smaller stands in the southeast region of the Caucasus. We know more about him than we know about this guy, Stephen Paddock, from Nevada. We know where this guy went, where this guy prayed, how much he talked to. We found his cell phones. We found notes. The fact that he's alive doesn't hurt. And he wants to turn around and hang the ISIS flag in his hospital room. I say, hang the ISIS flag in the hospital room and hang him next to it. But time will come. Probably both. Where are we, or when are we going to recognize the faults of our own ways? You see, we don't have a Christian problem or a Catholic problem or a Jewish problem or a Protestant problem or a Muslim problem or a Buddhist or a Taoist or any other is or isms that you want to think of. We have an Islamic fundamentalist problem. And we have the inability to separate politics from religion. I'll give you an example. Maybe it'll piss some people off. Maybe it won't. Irish Republican Army. Now, the Irish, the Catholic Irish, have been fighting the Protestant English in Northern Ireland for, well, a really long time. Until they managed to sit themselves down a short time ago to resolve most of their problems. For that matter, we don't hear about things being blown up every 5 weeks. The issue is really simple. It was a political issue. It was two different religious groups, or actually it was two different political groups that had different religions at their core that were disagreeing on who was supposed to run Northern Ireland. Now, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't have a dog in that fight. But one of the things I can say to you is it didn't spill over into the rest of the world. It didn't spill over into New York City. It didn't spill over into Miami. It didn't spill over into the into Western Europe. It was an issue that was localized. It was able to be seen as the political problem that it was. And yes, there were religious differences. And yes, it was at the core of the problem. But they resolved it. We didn't have to worry about it. we had our issues and we had our problems and we dealt with the people, but not the violence. Now we sit here and we fail to recognize that our problem happens to be a political aspect of a religion. Which happens to be rather funny because October 31st was the 500-year anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. Kind of neat how everything works itself out. Listen, I need to take a breather. I'll be back in a moment. Sit tight.
The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times. The Warren Markowitz Show. It's his world. You just live in it.
Okay, welcome back to my world. So what I was saying was this. 500 years ago, it was 1517, it was October 31st, 1517, if I remember the day correctly. It was when Martin Luther walked up and said, you know what, I need to save my church, and he nailed the 95 Reformations to the front door of the church. And hence, Lutheranism was born. And Protestantism went on from there. And yes, the Catholics and the Protestants all had issues amongst themselves, and you had the arguments that developed between the papists and the non-papists, and hence you wind up with the birth of Calvinism comes along later on, and baptism shows up somewhere along the line. The point I'm getting at is this. The religious reformation that took place in Catholicism, Roman Catholicism, which was the brand of Christianity that existed at the time, now there's various offshoots and so forth. The issues that evolve there need to evolve in Islam. I am not the type of person that says they're all evil. Everybody's bad. Two things. A, I was never brought up that way. And B, as a lawyer, I recognize there are no absolutes. Primarily because I wasn't brought up that way. I don't judge people that way. I may be apprehensive. I may be cautious. I may question. But I don't judge groups based upon skin color or religion that way. Just not work. This doesn't work. But what we're finding here is this. In the 1960s and the 1970s and even in the 1980s, when people from the Arab world, the Muslim world, came to America, they came to assimilate. They came to be a part of America. They came to be part of the American dream, to raise a family, to build a business, to, live in a better place. How's that one for you? It didn't make a difference where they came from. Some people came from Ethiopia. Some people came from Egypt. Some people came, and I met a lot of these people. I grew up in Long Island. I met everybody. I mean, literally, it was a great place to grow up because it was built on the American dream, built on the idea of you can make it better. You know, the old joke was if you were born in Brooklyn, you moved out to Staten Island, then you moved to New Jersey. If you were born in Queens or raised in Queens, you moved to Long Island. If you were in the Bronx, you went to Westchester and Rockland. There were things that you were expected to do. There were, you go to school, you got married, you got a job, you bought a home, you raised your family. These were the expectations. These are the part and parcel of the American dream. And yet, now what we find ourselves doing is we find ourselves in a situation in which there are people coming to this country that absolutely, positively do not wish to be here or do not wish to be a part of what is here. Because they think where they left is better. So I have two things to say to that. If you've come here for the purpose of being a refugee, you are more than welcome to stay here so long as you abide by our rules. This isn't shithole USA or shithole Middle Asia. This is America. This is the United States. We have rules. Not all found in the Bible. They're not all found in the Quran. They're not all found in some holy book. They are founded in a place called a statute in which we as human beings have agreed to abide by. Some people like them, some people don't like them, but they all apply equally. So if you're going to stick around, abide by the rules. It's my house, my rules. That's how it works. It's really not that complicated. If you were wandering around the Middle East and you came across a family, you were taken in, you were invited to be a part of their table, you abided by their rules. Same applies here. What we're finding, though, is that people that are coming to the United States now, from the 90s and the 2000s and the 2010s, in the last 30 years, those people are coming here not for the same reasons that others came. The argument that we grow our country through immigration and we grow ourselves that way does not hold water. Because these people are not coming to improve their lot in life. They're coming to change yours. You see this big deal about President Trump's argument that he should restrict immigration from seven particular countries or refugees from seven particular countries. Everybody was up in arms. Oh, you can't stop them based on religion. Well, guess what? Yeah, you can. Because they have no right of religious freedom from the United States until they're here. And you must recognize the fact that we need to separate religion from politics. There are plenty of, and I'm not being an apologist, I'm looking at the reality of circumstances. There are plenty of Muslims in this country that go about their business on a daily basis, and we have no inclination that they are even here. It's like all of you guys on the left who decide that every gun owner is a threat to the United States. Every gun in Americans' hands is a threat to the United States. Well, if they were a threat, you'd know it by now. There's 100 million of us who carry firearms and 300 and some odd million firearms and probably a trillion rounds of ammunition is the going number these days. If we were a threat, you'd know it. One out of three, based upon the current estimates, the number of people in the United States. It's a similar situation. Population is smaller, percentage-wise. Muslims are a small percentage in the United States, but the circumstances are similar. If the great population of Muslims was a problem to us, we'd know it. Our problem is separating politics from religion. And therein lies our problem. Our immigration restraints allow us to separate politics from religion. It allows us to look into the politics of an individual. But the self-destructive individuals in this country have decided that you can't look at things because you can't judge people based on that. Well, I got news for you. If somebody showed up at your front door and demanded entry into your home, are you just going to simply let them walk in? Because the issue of good and evil is a man-made one. The issue of right and wrong is a man-made one. Because if you believe in good, you have to believe in an evil. I'll give you an example. Working yesterday, up to my earlobes, I got a habeas petition I have to file at the end of today. And here we are. The door, somebody knocks on my door. And I look through the people, and there are two women standing there. Now, those of us know that if you live in Vegas or you live in the Nevada area, or even if you don't, actually, the Mormon missionaries will knock on your door. They'll want to talk to you. They'll introduce themselves. You also have the Seventh-day Adventists and the various born-again Christian groups and so on and so forth. And I don't remember what group these ladies belong to. They were polite. They were social. But somebody wanted to try and convince me that the devil was in charge of the United States and the devil was in charge of the world. And I asked her, I said, I got a question for you. Do you believe in good? Yes. Do you believe in evil? Yes. Do you believe that one can exist without the other? She goes, yes. I said, well, how is that possible? How do you know good without evil? How do you know right from without wrong? How do you know when your kids are behaving properly without realizing that they're behaving improperly? You see, the biggest problem we're faced right now with our immigration circumstances in dealing with, when dealing with problems like we found in New York City recently is that we're refusing to recognize that evil needs to be addressed first. I've rallied against this before. I've had this conversation before. It is up to the Muslims in this world to establish a reformation, to recognize that the bad things that have occurred as part of their religious texts are either to be relegated to the dustbins of history or to be reformed and spoken ill about. You don't think it can happen? Maybe not. You may have an outgrowth of Islam in the United States that is different than what is practiced in the rest of the world. You and I both know what that's going to lead to. The Islamists and the rest of the world will turn around and say, well, we can murder these people because they're apostates. They don't believe. Then again, the Sunnis and Shias have been doing it for centuries. We're not dealing with something that is entrenched in American culture and entrenched in American society. We're not dealing with something that is entrenched in European society. We're dealing with a problem that has risen in its head again after nearly 800 years. Well, no, wait, let me see. We'll go with 700 years or 600 years of being forced out of Europe. The Battle of Vienna, the battles in Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, that forced Islam out. I mean, if the last empire, the last Islamic empire was the Ottoman Empire, and they got carved up in 1920, at the end of World War I, when everything was being divided up and broken apart. This isn't something that's that old, that it's that new. But we're teaching ourselves that we can ignore history because it's inconvenient. And we're doing that in the United States today. We're stripping monuments. Whether or not you agree with the historical fact that the Confederate States fought over the issue of slavery, you know what? You deal with that. There were slave states and there were free states. There were border states that fought themselves internally in some situations during the Civil War. There were great heroes on both sides, whether you want to accept it or not. There were chivalrous issues. One of the greatest non-combatant events ever in American history was the surrender at Appomattox. The idea that we could end the war and heal each other by recognizing that it's time to go home. We've had enough. Brother against brother, cousin against cousin, neighbor and neighbor. It's enough. We go home. Whether or not you recognize the heroic actions of great traitors in American history. Benedict Arnold, before he was a traitor, was one of the greatest generals in history. As a matter of fact, there's a monument to his, was it boot or his leg, in New York. And Robert E. Lee was a great commander and a great educator at West Point before he went on to lead the Army of Northern Virginia and command the Confederate armies. But I'm not sitting here to hold people up. I'm sitting here to establish that history is inconvenient. Truth is inconvenient. If we are going to allow unfettered immigration into the United States from parts of this world that have had, that A, contribute nothing, and B, export violence, we're going to wind up with violence. We're going to ignore the fact that the safest places in this country happen to be those that are armed by a civilian population. We're going to continue to develop cities like L.A., New York, and Chicago that where you can't carry a firearm, you're more likely to get hurt. England itself, London, everybody touted London. Everybody touted the idea that, you know, firearms are now illegal in the UK, and London's going to be the safest place in the world. London is now more dangerous than New York City, because the police officers don't deal with the low-level problems. So the petty crime is what's really bothering you, because they're concentrating on the other stuff because it's become more violent. If we don't get a hand on keeping out things that poison us, we're going to be dealing with more issues like the event that transpired in New York City. We are going to see things again that transpired like Vegas. Nearly 600 people were injured or killed by one person. Democrats say the guns did it. No, the guns didn't do it. They didn't schlep themselves up to the 32nd floor. They didn't load themselves. They didn't point themselves out a window, and they didn't pull their own triggers. Guns are tools. And if you have an argument or you want to see how things work out like that, why don't you look at the mass events that have occurred in China over the last 10 years, and you'll discover they use knives. Individuals use knives. 30 people, 40 people stabbed, injured, or murdered with a guy with a knife, because nobody had the ability to defend themselves. No, I'm not saying you could have done anything with a handgun, or even a long gun for that matter, if you were at the October 1st event here in Vegas, because of the trend, because of the way that things went down. I'm talking about the general perspective on things. It's not always about a bad guy or a bad tool. It's about the bad guy. I need a breather. I'll be back. We're going to talk about rigged elections in the DNC when I get back. Sit tight.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-0514 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-0514 to take your call now. Call 1-800-516-0514. That's 1-800-516-0514. Again, 1-800-516-0514.
It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Okay, we're back. We're going to put some things on the back burner, deal with the rant later, and we want to talk about the revelation of a rigged primary election with the DNC and Hillary taking things over. All right, not everybody's surprised, shocked, and awed. We can move on with the conversation. We have been saying this. Now, think about this for a second. Who has been screaming at the top of their lungs that the Russians have been influencing the election and caused the loss of Hillary? Caused Hillary's loss. The downfall of the first female president was brought on by the Russian influence. Yeah. There is an old saying, thou dost protest too much. Generally speaking, it's when somebody accuses you of something, they're generally the ones that are trying to deflect from themselves. In the last couple of days, we learned that Ms. Clinton was dealing with the debts that Mr. Obama left the DNC in by funneling money directly through the PACs and the state parties in order to raise millions of dollars, and then turned around without the nomination and controlled the advertising and controlled the money and controlled the support of the DNC. It's a good old-fashioned exercise of the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. And Miss Clinton certainly had the gold and was certainly in charge of the rules. That included using and paying for Russian dossiers and foreign information and campaigns in which we were told one thing and something else was actually the truth, disinformation campaigns. And now we find that everybody is so up in arms that she stole the nomination from Bernie. Well, any of us who was paying attention during the election realized that she stole the nomination from Bernie. Again, I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,000 times more. Bernie is not my idea of a politician for the United States. I shouldn't say that. Let me make that corrected. He's not a leader for the United States. He's a socialist, he's a communist, and he's somewhere in between of those two, which the difference is almost irrelevant. Anybody who holds the idea of the Soviet Union out as a grand and virtuous way of living is a fool. Because the whole thing involving Leninism and Stalinism and Marxism was a fool's folly. It's simple. Why are you going to work to make somebody else's life better? Because that's what they're expecting you to do. Think about what's going on in this country. Think about the tax levels we're dealing with. In general, if you make above, $200,000 a year for a couple, by the time you turn around, you only have $100,000 a year to work with. Now, those of you who make $30,000 a year look at $100,000 and go, oh boy, that's a lot of money. Just move the zeros on your debts. Move the zeros on your obligations. Move the decimal point. That's all you got to do. If you really want to figure it out, move the decimal point. If you want to see how tough things are, go shopping on the first or second of the month. Watch what happens to the supermarkets. The number of people dependent upon government assistance. The number of people that shop once a month and the food is going to make it to the end of the week, the end of the month. Because that's all they got. Whether it be a family of two or three or four or five, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. You'll notice those people. They're the ones with the shopping carts that are overflowing on the first couple of days in the month. We are being taxed into slavery if we haven't been there already. We are being manipulated. We are being lied to. We're being challenged. We are being told that it's okay. It's not okay. The two-party system has failed us, and I'm not advocating a one-party system. I'm more along the lines of advocating the same concept that Washington advocated, which was no political parties. You vote for a candidate, in my opinion, you vote for a candidate that fulfills the obligations that you foresee and that supports your positions. Because when you have people like Hillary and Sanders literally manipulating the outcomes so that they can get what they want and then blaming somebody else for doing exactly what they did in order to be able to say, well, they did it. How are you supposed to trust what comes out of their mouths? How are you supposed to trust? You know, we started this whole conversation today with the events that transpired a month ago here in Vegas. And in the very beginning, the sheriff started off with a gung-ho attitude and position and a perspective that he is going to deal with it. And he looked like he was in charge. And then it became every couple of days, and then it became once a week, and now it's nothing. We barely hear what's going on because there's nothing for them to share. I'm pretty sure that with the readjustment of the timeline, the one-time virtuous appearance on Ellen of the hero that stopped or interfered with or discovered the shooter, we're pretty much at wit's end when it comes to the details they're going to share with us. Now, I'm not a favorite of parasitic lawyers. I work really hard trying not to be associated with parasitic lawyers. But it's this time that I think that a parasitic lawyer is probably going to be the only way for us to get an answer. And for that matter, a bunch of parasitic lawyers going after the DNC for their outing, well, not for their outing, but for the outed position that they manipulated the election, would be important. You're talking 60 million people voted for him. 64 million people voted for Hillary. But in reality, what do we know about the votes for the other side or for the other two guys? See, I always held the position that Hillary let Sanders come in because she wanted to attract the young, disconnected, uneducated progressive. And the other guy is so far-fetched and so far off that I don't even remember his name, was there to make it look like there was actually a race going on. That the DNC didn't put up willingly just one candidate. The Republicans, and I'm not saying we, but the Republicans fielded 17 candidates. And over that period of time, the American people, whittled it down. Just as a record, I don't vote in the Republican or the Democrat primary. I'm a member of the Independent American Party, which is part of the Constitution Party. So we elect ours at our conventions. But 17 Republicans came to the stage. And whether or not you consider Trump a Republican or a rhino or a left-leaning progressive Republican or a whatever, but 17 were on that stage. And it was whittled down and chopped up and manipulated to the point where we the American people, were able to come to the, okay, this is the person that the Republicans have agreed to put forward. Three is what the DNC put forward. Three. Hillary, Bernie, and some unnamed guy who was, I think, a governor somewhere. Three. That's what you have. That's the quality and depth of people that you have as a party. Three. For a seat in which it matters. Where the person who sits in that chair matters. You got three is what you're able to pull from, 75, 100 million people in your party. Where were the other governors who wanted to run? Where were the other people? Were they told not to? Was the circumstance manipulated to the point where they were also said, well, you know, don't even bother, you're just going to waste your money. Funnel the money to Hillary, she'll take it for all of us. Were they that set for the idea of a female president that they wanted to be a Democrat? Who are they going to put up next time? Is Elizabeth Warren going to run? Is this lunatic in Florida who decided to go after President Trump who looks like a pimp in a cowboy hat? Is she going to run? Barely can speak English? We are in sad shape when it comes to politics in this country. We have gotten to the point of identity politics being in the controlling factor. You have to fill in a blank. How many boxes can you check off before we'll let you be a part of our group? Okay, what's the next one? A lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, something or other. What are we going to do? I mean, we're going to turn around and... I've been watching Jordan Peterson. We'll check out some of his videos he's posted on YouTube. Psychology professor. He's a professor of either sociology or psychology at the University of Toronto. Now, if you've ever visited Canada, depending upon what part of the U.S. you live in, will generally determine where you've probably gone. If you've lived in the eastern part of New York on the upstate side and that part of the Northeast, you've probably gone to Quebec. If you lived in the western portions, you've probably visited Toronto. If you visited in the far west, in other words, Washington, California, Idaho, Nevada, Utah, etc., you've probably gone to Vancouver, British Columbia. These are the places that are convenient to visit, because Canada's only got about 30 million people and stretched across the entire length of the United States, and most of them live within 150 to 200 miles from the border. That's it. You're not going to places like Medicine Hat, which are smaller and in much smaller places. I'll be perfectly honest with you, considerably colder in the wintertime. But you may know people from there. I certainly do. But he was talking about the issue of transgender words and being held accountable in the law for not using people's proper pronouns. And why am I talking about this? Because this is the identity politics at its worst. And this is what we're being played with. Freedom of speech means we get to use the words that reflect our visions, our desires, our goals. If you want to talk to somebody in the third person, be my guest. You have that right to talk to somebody in the third person. What you don't have a right to do is to demand that that person talk to you in the third person. And to do it by law. By law is a force of arms. Is the strength of the entire government behind you. And this is what's happening in Canada on a scale that is one-tenth the United States. Canada is actually enshrining in its laws the requirement that you use proper pronouns to identify people. Controlling the words controls the conversation, controls the conversation, controls your thought. You see where we're going with this? When people are forced to speak in a certain fashion, thought conforms to language. You say the word boy, what do you see? You say the word dog, what do you see? Crocodile, alligator, whale. Words have meaning. Words have impact. In the legal world, we have things called words of independent significance. These are words that actually mean something. If we're talking about a civil suit and we talk about assault, we know what the factors of assault are. If you're talking about murder, you realize there's a dead body somewhere. Multiple murder means there's more than one. So what do you do when you have a country that decides to take, and I did the numbers, I actually looked it up, because it was bothering the daylights out of me. Why can so much time be wasted on something of such little importance? And no, I am not devaluing the life of somebody who thinks they belong as a woman, but they were born as a man. I will tell you this from top to bottom. I think that Bruce Jenner or Caitlyn Jenner, whatever he or she calls himself at this point in time, has some serious issues. But I'm not going to degrade their value as an individual, and I'm certainly not going to look at them as something other than what's going on. Explain to me. Tell me what's, you know, but people have value. Individual human life has value, and I firmly believe that. But some people need help. But don't take the population, which is estimated to be 1.4 million in the United States, of transgendered persons or persons who identify as transgendered, which is 0.004 of the estimate of about 330 million people in the U.S. overall. So it's 0.004. So it's 0.4%. No, wait. It's less, 0.4%. 1.4 million people stretched out over 50 states, just in the continental United States, is so insignificant you're probably not likely going to run into somebody that you even know about. And to enshrine the whole concept in law, that makes my thoughts illegal, because that's what it is. You restrain speech, you restrain thought. So we've got issues. Maybe we'll talk about them on Tuesday. Maybe we'll find something new. But the bottom line is this. Still haven't touched on the pedophilia that's going through through Hollywood. Can you almost imagine what's going to happen there when the whole societal meltdown occurs there and we find out even more? Because I don't know about you, I could care less about Kevin Spacey. I could care less about Harvey Weinstein. Tell me what you're going to do about the problem and fix it. Maybe recognize that your behavior is part of the problem. Maybe that should change. Who knows? Anyway, thanks for joining me today. I am Warren Markowitz. I'm your host on Politically Incorrect. Thanks for wandering through my mind and seeing what kind of dark and dusty and creepy spaces we can come up with. I'll chat with you soon. I'll see you in a couple of days. You guys be good. And again, thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it. The Warren Markowitz Show. On Red State Radio, Spreaker, and Podomatic.